Well, experts, welcome to the call. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Doing great.
Great, Ariel.
So we've got Matthew, Matt, and Marnie, the three M's with us. I love that. Well, I thought I'd like to start with just the short version of each of your stories of how you became a love and relationship expert. And Marnie, girls first, let's start with you.
Well, thank you. You know, I got married when I was 22 to someone I met when I was 19, and the reason that I said yes was very simple. It was because he asked, which is not the best reason to make a choice for a lifetime commitment. And during that marriage, you know, I just spent the whole time trying to be someone who I thought he would love. And no matter what I did, for 17 years, I always felt like something was broken or flawed in me. And I began to distance and shut down. And we had these three kids, and all of a sudden, I felt like trapped by them. And as a mother, you know, that's like that's a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. And so when we ultimately got divorced, you know, it was tragic. And rather than kind of take a pause and figure out why I felt so unworthy and broken, I decided to fill the hole in my soul by finding someone else. And I got online and I met another version of my husband with a different face. Of course, he was better looking and younger, so I thought that was good enough. But ultimately, that relationship ended up in some ways being more tragic because I had put all my eggs in that basket. And when he cheated on me and left me, I was driving in my car trying to figure out who I could get to go pick up my kids at carpool so I could go do like a drive-by stalker ex-girlfriend thing. And I ran this red light and there was honking and I pulled over and was kind of scared realizing that I was crazy and that if I didn't fix the one common thing in all my relationships, which was me, I would probably do this for the rest of my life, and almost worse than that, I would teach it to my three daughters. And that's really when I kind of took a pause and I did all the work that I needed to do and studied and figured it out. And I came up with a system of how you break free from your romantic patterns, fall in love with yourself, create a life that you love, and then all of a sudden your attraction factor is off the charts. And that's when you date. And that's how I found my amazing partner.
Oh, what a great story. I'm sorry you had to suffer so much to get there, but good story. Matthew, what's your story?
I started, I think, like so many people do, as an insecure teenager who was afraid of talking to girls. I had so much that I wanted to do in my life, whether it was go and do a school play or go and talk to that girl I liked at school or whatever, and I could never bring myself to do those things because I was so worried about what would happen, the rejection, what other people would think of me. And so confidence was really something I focused on for myself to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to go through my whole life missing out on things if I cannot shake this belief that what other people think matters and that rejection is something I can't handle. And so I was big on figuring out ways to help myself get through that. And when I did, I started coaching guys on how to do the same, not women to begin with, but guys. And I began over a two-year period working with guys on every part of their confidence. What happened was these guys who I would work with on their confidence in every area would increasingly come back to me again and again for help with women. The same insecurities that I'd always had. You know, I was afraid of getting rejected. I didn't know how to approach this woman. I am afraid that she's going to hurt me with her words or that I'm going to get my heart broken, that I won't feel manly enough. Guys had all these insecurities, and I started working with them on those. So over 2 years, I worked with over 10,000 men in their love lives, and by the end of that, women were asking me when I was going to do the same for them. Initially, I was terrified because doing having a room full of guys I was coaching, that seemed like nothing compared to having a room full of women. The idea of having women in a room like that, I thought, you know what? I know women are going to come with issues that I don't understand. I know that there is so much about women that I need to learn myself before I coach women. But what happened was when I first ran a seminar for women, they didn't care what I knew about women. They cared what I knew about guys. And so I started telling them what I knew about guys, and I ended up creating this organization that I have, Get the Guy. And over a five-year period, I have live events that have coached over 50,000 women. I have a book, Get the Guy, that's now become a New York Times bestseller, a network TV show on NBC. And all of that has come from the fact that my philosophy has been very simple, which is there are three parts you need to know. One is understanding how to be a high-value person yourself and recognizing that you're high-value. The second is understanding how to create a high-value lifestyle so that other people want to be a part of that life. And the third is understanding the opposite sex. And when you've got those three parts, your love life becomes something of an inevitability instead of something you hope is going to happen for you.
Oh, that's great. And Matt Boggs, how did you end up in this space?
you know, I'm of the believer that experts and authors don't teach necessarily what they know, but what they need to learn in the beginning. And for me, that was definitely the case. I grew up a hopeful romantic, always wanted to find the one, always wanted deep love, and had a very crushing experience when I was a teenager watching my parents divorce. And within 3 weeks of my parents' divorce, after 27 years, both my aunts and uncles, we all lived on this farm together, they divorced as well. And so it was like this big marriage bomb exploded in my world. And that set me on a particular trajectory with beliefs about relationships and about how things work out. And it wasn't until my mid-20s that I spent some time with my grandparents who had been married 63 years. And I would hang out with them once a week. We called it Adventures with the Professor, where we'd go on these long adventures together. And it was the first time in my life where I had seen a real lifelong love story, where here these two people were married 63 years, and they were still crazy about one another. And I thought to myself, man, I want to know how you create that. How do you create this amazing love story? So I enrolled my best friend, and we jumped in an RV with my grandmother. My grandfather had passed away at that time because he had cancer. And we drove 12,000 miles interviewing America's greatest marriages to find out not only how they chose the one and how they attracted the one, but the key elements that helped them keep the fire alive, keep that attraction burning. And so that became a best-selling book called Project Everlasting. We were on the Today Show, on CNN, on Headline News, and we were doing all these seminars. And along the way, studying everything I could get my hands on about, you know, about how to find the one, because that was important to me, and how to build relationships, learning what creates positive patterns in relationships and in attraction, and learning really what to look for in a life partner. And because I had been single for 4 or 5 years, not by choice. Like, if I could have had it my way, I would have met her a long time ago. But the last stop on the book tour, after applying what these couples taught me and what I learned from all the research, I ended up meeting my wife at a book signing. And then we got married 4 years later to the day that we met at that book signing.
Oh, how fun. What a great story. And I've seen that picture of your grandparents, and they were just so cute.
Adorable, yeah. Adorable, they're
right?
Amazing.
So I'd like to know from each of you the top one or two biggest mistakes that you see men and women making when it comes to dating. And, Matthew, let's start with you.
I think men and women in some ways make the same mistakes, and in other ways they don't. Women certainly, I think, make the mistake of listening too much to culture and conditioning and thinking that they're not supposed to do anything about this area of their lives. I think that so much conditioning teaches women that they're supposed to be the ones being chased. And in a sense, I actually still agree with that, that the dynamic has been around so long where it's the guy who is really chasing that woman. I think that's okay. But the problem is it becomes mistranslated. So now you've got a lot of women who associate the idea of not being the chaser with the idea of not doing nothing, not doing anything.
Right.
So you've got a lot of people who just aren't, they're going out at night and they're waiting for guys to do something and not realizing that guys generally aren't doing anything. There is a small percentage of guys who are out there making stuff happen, and the rest of guys, and I can count myself in this in the past, are standing around waiting for a really obvious license that it's okay to go and talk to a woman before they'll do something. So women forget often that they need to give a guy a license. They don't need to become the chaser. They just need to give a guy a license. And I feel like there are so many role models right now that that don't give the right impression of what to do, of what a confident, sexy woman is. And more, like I watch films these days, and like the film Twilight. I feel like in the film Twilight, you've got every teenage girl watching that, and Twilight is like this teenage girl's dream. She's being chased by two really hot guys. One's a werewolf, one's a vampire. She's being chased by both of them. They both really want her, despite the fact that, I haven't seen the whole thing, but she doesn't seem to make her mind up. And it's like they both still going after her and still want her like crazy and just love her unconditionally. And she's really miserable and grumpy and moody.
Yeah.
And you're like, so now teenage girls, they look at that and it's like, well, I can just stay miserable and grumpy and moody because then I'll have two really hot guys chasing me at the same time. And you think, no, you know what, this isn't a good lesson. There are people, the way you actually get someone and give someone that license is to be that radiant, sexy, confident person who enjoys life and isn't afraid of engaging men. And so many women, I find, are not prepared to do that in the early stages.
Thank you. Marnie, what are the mistakes you're seeing?
I think I work with a lot of really strong, successful, independent women. And I think that one of the biggest mistakes they make is that they're very busy ruling out instead of ruling in. You know, it's like they approach the love journey like it's, the next big career move. And, they come with their list and like you're a waste of time if you're not like X, Y, and Z. And, there's a little bit almost of entitlement. And coming in from this very masculine place, it's really turning men away. Yet in the sort of irony of it, they're like, he's not this, he's not this, he's too this, he didn't do that. There's no, like, compassion, giving men the benefit of the doubt. It's almost like they're guilty until proven innocent. And as a result, a lot of these women, they want these strong alpha men, but they're coming at it from this very alpha approach, and it's a complete mismatch. And so they feel like there are no great men out there, but the truth is there are amazing men out there if you have the right approach, kind of like Matthew was talking about. You're in your feminine, you're that sexy, feminine, powerful, confident woman.
Love that, and I think that's so right on. Matt, what do you say?
I'll echo that. That's the biggest one I see, and I'll just add on, learning how to shift into the polar of what it is that you want. So if you want a strong alpha man, learning how to activate the feminine side of you, learning how to master both of those energies is key. And I'll say the biggest mistake that I see, in piggybacking on what Marnie was saying, is mindset. It's the beliefs that we're holding in mind just in our everyday life around love, about ourself, about love identity, about what's possible. And it's very difficult when you're in an environment where everyone's saying, there are no good men out there and all the good men are taken, or they're gay, or they're this, or they're that, they're not available. And so removing yourself from that into a positive environment, it's interesting because there's research done where women are more likely to meet a man by hanging out with other married women than they are by hanging out with other single women. And I think part of the contribution to that is because married women are having a different conversation. They're not bathing themselves in this energy that there's no good men out there. And so really deciding what your mindset is going to be and having a mindset of possibility, having a mindset of opportunity, having a mindset for what it is that you want to create completely changes your energy. And then not dragging your past into new relationships, which is what Marnie was speaking of, measuring up these men, judging them. I think it's very easy to drag our past, especially the longer the past gets and the more full the past gets, the easier it is to bring that into a new relationship and come forth with judgments and preconceived ideas, but rather than being just fresh and being open and being fully present to the opportunity that's right there is one of the challenges that I see for sure.
I have to say, I agree with all three of you. I know certainly that was an issue I had when I was dating, that I was a better man than most of the men I was dating for a long time. I had to make a conscious effort. I used to sit in a lot of Dr. Pat Allen's workshops learning how to embrace my feminine energy.
She's brilliant.
Isn't she amazing? Yeah, because I was scaring guys off. You know, I had more power than most of them, so this is all really important. I want to switch into another topic here about flirting, and I'm interested to know if you guys believe flirting is an important part of the dating process, and if it is, how do we learn how to flirt? What are your tips for that? And Matt, why don't you go first this time?
All right. It's absolutely essential. Attraction is built on tension in a relationship. And so the more tension you can create through flirting with someone, it just helps to activate attraction triggers. It helps to build the attraction, build the magnetism, pull you two together. And so, you know, the classics always work. You know, people, I think, don't give credence to the idea that eye contact, smiling, and touch are what I call the big three, right? And those are classics, but yet if you use them well, if you learn how to use these tools, they can be magic in your life. And so the one thing that I will tell women in flirting with men, more often than not, women abort the flirting process before a man has even clued in that she's flirting with him. Because every man has seen a woman look at him and finally built up the nerve, finally built up the courage to cross the long room in order to talk to her, and he makes that effort to talk to her, and then he realizes after talking to her that she wasn't looking at him at all. She was just glancing around the room, and he's like hoping she was looking at him, so he saw her, and then she really isn't interested at all, and then has the long walk of shame back, and his friends are laughing. He's like, dude, you struck out, you know? So every man's been rejected, and so like Matt was saying early on, that men are looking for that massive license, you know, that big green light that, yes, it's okay to go over and talk to you. And so what I would say is making sure that you hold using your eye contact longer than you think you should as a woman. So once you start to feel nervous, once you start to feel it's a little awkward and you crack a little smile with the side of your mouth and make sure that he knows that you know that he knows that you know you're looking at each other. And that's when that you build that connection and tension.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Eye contact, smiling, and touch, the top three. Matthew, what do you say?
Flirting is one of those, I think, really misunderstood concepts. I think if you look at attraction and what it takes for any attraction to occur, two of the things you need, one is a perceived challenge element and the other is a perceived value element. I could spend an hour on each of those alone, but if you look at, say, what creates something that creates both of those, it's someone who is able to demonstrate a unique combination of characteristics. So if you have just a feminine woman, she's boring. She is. If you have too much of a girly girl and she comes off like she wants things done for her all the time and she's too prissy, a guy's bored of that immediately. If you get someone who's just sexy gets boring very quickly as well, because he wants to take her home and sleep with her and maybe do that again next week, but that's about it. And if you get the woman who's just serious, then that's no fun either. If you get the woman who's just funny, that's no fun either. So what guys are really looking for is someone who can combine those things in a very unique way. And for me, what flirting is about at its core is being able to pepper an initial interaction with as many different characteristics of yourself as possible. Because when that happens, someone gets a very three-dimensional picture of who you are very quickly. Most women want to know, what's the number one reason I don't get the callback? And the number one reason women don't get the callback is because when they were on the date, the guy didn't see enough dimensions of her. He saw one predominant dimension, maybe two if he was lucky, and that wasn't enough to hold him.
So true.
A woman understands, like, how do I bring out three or four different parts of myself that when combined, because by the way, let's relate this to men. The man who's just a comedian, he's not scarce. You can find many men who are funny. If you find the man who's just seductive, he's not scarce. You can find many men like that. If you find the guy who's just serious and ambitious, you can find many men. You find a guy who's seductive, ambitious, and funny, now you've got someone that a woman sees as a rare catch. And it works the same way the other way around. So for me, flirting is about, in the early stages, bringing out every different part of you instead of focusing on the one aspect of your personality that you're most comfortable with.
Mm, I love that. That makes so much sense. And Marnie, for the women listening in that are thinking, but what do I do? What do I do? How do I do this?
Exactly. I was going to take it under the practical realm, right? And I want to kind of pick up on what Matthew was saying, is that you can pursue in a very feminine way by being a person who asks questions, who engages in a conversation. So number one is, like, ask for help. I know the guys here on this panel are, like, a big fan of asking for help. But it's like, you're at the market. It's like, have you ever had this cracker with this cheese, or what cheese do you recommend, or can you reach this for me? Ask a general question. You know, is there a Starbucks near here that you know of? Really make it obvious by starting the conversation, and then be open. And above all, I think the number one way to activate your flirting is to put down your cell phone, your digital device. I think so many women say there are no men, and that's because their heads are down. And if you put your phone away, and you open up and you smile, I am always offer the 20 interaction challenge. Set yourself up, whether it's the cutest guy in the room or just a guy that you want to practice flirting with. Start an interaction, put your phone down, set an intention that you're going to go out and you're going to meet and you're going to have a conversation. Maybe you're going to lean in and put your hand on his shoulder and say, it was great talking to you, and walk out. It's a confidence builder. And you'll create connection and you'll create chemistry just by being you. And then you confidently walk out the door. And when you do that 20 times, it puts you in this great zone so that when you go out into the world and maybe there's a guy that you really like, you have that confidence.
Oh, I love that. Practice flirting. When you were saying that, I was thinking about sometimes when I go out to play tennis, I think, oh, I'm going to hit the next 20 balls in a row, and I start counting. It's like, maybe with flirting, go out and say, you know, can I keep the conversation going for 20 questions? That's really great. I want to know from each of you, what do you believe is the most important thing to accomplish on a first date? So what do you want to get done on the first date, and what's the worst thing you could say or do on a first date? And, Matthew, why don't you start us off?
The worst thing that you could say on a first date. I think when people jump into anything to do with, firstly, negativity, people are very good at bringing the negativity of their day into their date. So as soon as someone starts complaining about their day, their life, their week, their job, immediately you're giving them an impression of what your life is like, even if that's just come from a bad mood that you're in that moment. So I always say, look, people take the first 5% they know about you and use it to determine the other 95% by imagination. And if the first 5% you bring to the table is negative, then they're going to extrapolate you as a negative person. I would also say, in the beginning, try and avoid talking about exes and your past in that way. If you are going to talk about your exes, do it in a very casual, arm's-length way that shows you have no emotion connected to that. One of the worst things I hear women do is they'll say, oh, my ex, who's this guy, or he's this type of guy. And if there's any venom in that at all, you, as a guy, it just sends alarm bells going off in your head because you go, uh-oh, there's still something there. She's still feeling something. I don't want to be around that energy, or this is a danger zone for me to be involved in. So exes are another thing. Any sort of physical insecurities is another thing. You know, anything to do with weight or the fact that they just came from work and they feel like they look like crap. Or, you know, a guy says, you look beautiful tonight. And she says, oh, are you kidding me? No, I don't. But anyway, you look great. It's amazing how obvious it is, but it's scary how obvious it is, and yet everyone does it.
Yeah, makes sense.
And if people can avoid doing those things, that, you know, I forget who said it, but Matt, I'm sure you'll know better than me. The conversation is often about leaving the wrong thing unsaid as opposed to saying the right thing. I forget, but ultimately that's what I'm saying is leave the wrong thing unsaid. It's not always about saying the right thing.
It's a great point, yeah.
So, Matt, what do you think are the worst things to do or say on a first date? And what would you want someone to accomplish on a first date?
God, I love both sides of those questions. And you know, just to echo what Matt said, because it's really about, you know, you want to leave out any negativity, absolutely. Leave out any insecurity, absolutely. And insecurity shows up in two ways, and especially for smart, powerful women, one of the secret, hidden, sneaky, insecure ways that it shows up and it comes across to men, men don't often see it as insecure, they just see it as unattractive. And it can come across as complaining about, you know, the way it shows up that's obvious is about the weight, is about, oh, I don't look good enough, or I'm tired, or this and that. But the way that insecurity comes across often for very powerful women that's hidden is coming across as too confident, too controlling, or they'll say they're bragging about their life, how successful they are, what they've done, where they've been, all of the stuff that comes across as boastful, or the idea is I'm better than the other women that you've met, and I want to let myself shine, and you paint yourself into this amazing category. If it's too boastful and it's overconfident, it actually shows up as seated in insecurity. So be careful for that. The best thing that we can do on a first date for both men and women is to be present. Just to be fully present, fully alive. Aliveness is the single greatest attraction factor anyone has. As human beings, we're all attracted to a sense of aliveness, a sense of fulfillment, a sense of joy. And we are in our most alive, joy-fulfilled state when we're fully present. And so it's about, you know, when, and we're also, like Matt said, shining the different aspects, the different facets of our personality. Those start to come out when we're fully present. I will tell you, I almost broke up with my wife. We were like 3 weeks into dating. We were dating long distance over the phone, and we're just talking on the phone, and I called her to break up with her. I'm outside of 24-hour fitness, gonna go in. I'm like, you know what? Talking to her on the phone, she was the most boring woman I'd ever met in my entire life. And but she was so gorgeous. I was like, ah. So I called her to break up with her, and I hear this voice in my head saying, man, relax. Just go on a date with her one time. And so she picked up the phone right as I heard that voice, and so we just talked and kept it cool. And then a couple weeks later, I came down to Los Angeles, which is where she was living, and we went on a date. And she was completely different. And she was shining all these, she was goofy and funny and kind of nerdy and just a riot to be with. And I felt, and both of us felt so comfortable around one another. I was like, what, who is this? You weren't giving me any of this on the phone. Like, who are you? And she was like, well, I was just nervous, you know, and I was holding back. And so really just shining yourself, and being present is key. And the last thing is discovery. It's very easy to get on a date with someone who, like, we're into the date and immediately there's potential and they're good looking. They've got the qualities that are on the list that we wrote out and we're getting excited about it. And it's very easy to, within 5 minutes of the date, start imagining marriage and the kids and where we're going to be. And I call that futurizing. And futurizing is the death of presence and taking you out of, and it also masks our ability to really see who they are. So our entire aim is discovery, to be present for herself and really discover who this person is for themselves and let them reveal all of who they are to you.
Hmm. Oh, that's great. Thank you. And Marnie, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to take it to the little practical realm here. I think that on a first date, you know, if you are interested in a guy, the first thing is to understand, you know, what would he need to know to continue the experience, right? What experience would he like to have as well as what experience would I like to have? And I think number one, again, I'm going to go back to that feminine, is really making it clear that you appreciate what he has created. I love this restaurant that you picked out. I love that, you know, you offered to pick me up. That's so rare these days. You know, he wants to know that he's done a good job, that he has made you happy. And that's a really important piece. And then I believe, and you guys, men can correct me if I'm wrong, I think there also has to be a little bit of that sensual, sexual chemistry energy so that he walks out of there knowing that, you know, maybe one day this could lead to some sort of intimacy, and that's where the flirting comes in. It's being seductive rather than, you know, slutty. Wearing
for sure,
something,
that's key.
Yeah,
key.
Right? One of my guys on a man panel once said, you know, if you wear a top where all we see is your boobs, it's really hard to not look at your boobs. So, you know, like help me help myself. You know, wear something that is attractive and maybe like a V-neck, but so that he can still see you, like leave something to the imagination and, you know, give him this idea that, yeah, you're interested, and that's going to make him, you know, want to go out with you again. And I will say the worst thing to do on a first date, and this is very more common than I think people would imagine, I call it the medical overshare. And it's like, would you like some of my macaroni? It's amazing. It's this gourmet macaroni. Oh, God, no. You know what? I actually have a dairy thing, and it makes me really, like, uncomfortable, you know, or it's any kind of sharing that is a little bit out of context, and it's random, and you think you're just being informational, it's a total turnoff. So don't share things that when they're out of context, a guy will go, what is this, and start to imagine all the bad things that could happen as a result.
Oh, good. That's great. So let's say you're on a first date, whether it's for coffee or lunch or dinner, and it's not going well. It's obvious it's not going well. How do you get out of it? What's a graceful way to leave it? And Marnie, start us off here. How do we get out of it? How do we gracefully leave when it's clearly just not going to go anywhere?
I am a big believer in dating karma and honesty. And when I talk to men, you know, I say, you know, I'll call you does not equal, you know, goodbye. Like, you don't have to say I'll call you if you don't mean it.
That's great. That's true.
It's like, you know, they're just like, oh, I just had to say it. That's what you say. So I would say, you know, I really had a great time meeting you. I love the connection. If you're doing what Matt Boggs is talking about, you're present, maybe you learned something new. It was really great. You know, I'm really clear about where I am in my life right now, and I know we're not a match, but I just wish you the best of luck, and it was just a pleasure to have this time with you. And you leave gracefully and with dignity, and just be kind and be honest, and keep it simple.
Okay, Matt, what do you say?
I repeat that, exactly. And, dating karma is right on, because I'm a huge believer in treating other people the way that we would want to be treated, and I'm a big fan that feedback is the breakfast of champions. And being honest with people, giving them where you stand, and being straightforward is the kindest thing that you can do. And also, what I want to highlight, the word kind that Marnie says, be honest, be straightforward, and be kind. You know, and a couple great phrases that have worked for my clients and have worked for me is, like you're saying, Marnie, I don't really feel like we're not a match, or I don't feel like this isn't a great fit, you know, but you're an amazing person, and I wish you the best of luck, and I know that you're going to have a lot of success. And keeping it, two other tips. Number one, if you're on a date, make sure that date is not in your house so you can get up and leave. and you don't have to kick them out or not at their house. It's much easier to have that first date experience. And I'm hoping you're having this first date experience in a cafe or someplace where the commitment level for you don't have to sit through the entire dinner before you're able to say that. But it's more of an engagement on a short-term basis where you can get a feel for it and then bounce if you need to.
Great. Matthew, do you have anything you want to add to this?
I think for me it comes down to context. If you've met someone, you know, if you met someone because you were paired up with someone by an online dating site or a matchmaking service or something like that, if it was very clear that it was a date, then I agree, you know, when you get to the end of it saying, I don't think this is a right fit, or, you know, I feel like you and I might not be right for each other, but I had so much fun with you. I think that's definitely a really lovely way of handling it. There's always going to be pain. No one likes to hear that. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. I think for a lot of what I encourage in my training, it's people going on less formal dates where in the beginning you may not even be clear that it is a date. You know, you invite someone out for coffee, or you're just like, hey, we should hang out sometime. And then you get together and you hang out. I think it's harder in those instances to get to the end of the date and say, I don't think it's a right fit, because in that particular moment, it's not ever been made clear that it is actually a date. And I think some of the best relationships actually start that way. So in those cases, though it may not be popular, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world just to phase someone out. You know, just to leave, say, all right, take care. And if you don't end up texting them or calling them, someone eventually is going to get the hint, unless they're crazy. But I feel like that's more their problem than yours.
I wish I had had this conversation many, many years ago, because here's what I used to do. If I was out on a date and I was like, okay, this is never going to work, I would start talking about all kinds of weird stuff like UFOs and extraterrestrials and that I believe I was from another planet, so that they would dump me.
I would just get as strange as possible. I feel like that's the least selfish strategy of all, because that's just the ultimate, that's like a kamikaze mission.
Exactly. Then you get the Trekkie who just falls in love with you. He's like, I love you, Ariel.
That never happened. I was very fortunate. They'd all go, oh, my God, this woman is so weird. Where's the door? Okay. We're digressing. So here's the next question. If a woman admits that she's seeking a committed relationship and a family early on in the dating process, Marnie, does it help or hurt her cause?
You know, I believe that it helps her cause in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously you don't want to present that information on the first date in a way that is like, so I'm looking for a relationship, where do you see this going, right? But if you, in the second or third date, talk about, you know, where you are in your life and your values are around family, and, you know, for those strong, successful women, they always say, you know, how do I explain why I'm still single? And I always say, you know, I just loved building my career, and I've got to travel, and I have great friends, and I have this full life, and I'm in a place where I'm ready to share it with someone else, and say, so where are you in your life? You know, you're trying to find out if there's a values match. And the bottom line is, if the guy is not looking for the same thing, it still helps her cause ultimately, because he goes away, which creates room for the next guy who is. I think that there is sort of like an urban legend, like the more low maintenance you are and the less needs you have, then a guy, you know, that's how you get the guy. And I think you could get just any guy that way, but you're probably not going to get the guy that's going to go the long term. And so, again, I believe in knowing what it is that you want, saying it in a really feminine way, having an engaging conversation about it, see where he stands in a conversation, not a declaration. And I call it data dating. Collect data about it. Have fun while you're doing it. And if you're looking for different things, then it's not a match, and that's okay.
Makes sense. Matt, do you have anything different to add here?
Yeah, absolutely. And those are all excellent points. And realizing that your job is to discover where this man is. For a man, timing is huge when it comes to commitment and when it comes to marriage. A buddy of mine just told me that he's getting ready to propose to his girlfriend. This is a guy, if he dated this same girl 5 years ago, he would not be proposing. he's at the right place at the right time in his life. And so it's about discovering where you are in that. This same scenario that you're talking about, Ariel, happened to me on the first date with my wife. We were in Huntington Beach Pier. We walk back. We get in the car. And it's not as much about what you say as about how you say it. So here's a strategic tip. Do not make it about this guy. Men are triggered by competition. No guy wants to see a girl or a woman that he's interested in possibly dating other guys. If he's at all excited about you, the thought about you dating other guys doesn't sit well with him. So what my wife said when we got back in this car was, she kind of leans back and she looks out the window, and we're just talking about life and what it is that we want. And she said, you know, I'm tired of just dating randomly. Like, I think I'm ready for something serious in my life. And don't get me wrong, like, I don't even know you. I don't know if like it's you and I or anything, but that's where I'm going and that's what I want. And so I'm sitting there, and I was dating other women at that point too. And I was thinking to myself, I might be able to provide that for you. There's a key with men, an attraction trigger is their ability to deliver happiness. So if you can give him a blueprint for what you want and he's in the same space, he thinks he can deliver that to you, that will charge him up. That will trigger his attraction. So I was sitting there thinking, I might be able to deliver this to her. Okay, and I immediately put her in a different category because I knew what her vision was for her life, what she wanted, than these other girls I were dating that they were just there to have fun and hang out. They didn't want a committed relationship. And eventually I very quickly stopped dating those other women and dated her because I wanted to be exclusive with her. I did not want my wife dating other guys, another guy who might come in and provide that commitment that she was looking for.
Makes perfect sense. Matthew, what do you think about this?
I think what Matt says is really smart in terms of being able to give him that sense that he could fill that part of your life. But not the key part of that for a guy is to not give him the impression that you have settled on him as that person.
Right.
That's everything. Because for a guy, if he meets you and after a few dates feels you're settling on him as that person, then he goes into it's like he goes into buyer mode. If you're at an auction as a woman, you want him in seller mode, not buyer mode. And if he's in buyer mode where he's like, well, she's selling a relationship to me, and my choice now is whether I buy it or not. Does it matter if I buy it today? No, of course not, because she's settled on me. You want a guy into seller mode where he knows you're open to a relationship, but he's going to have to sell you on the idea of it being with him. That's the difference. And you can have, for example, you can as a woman say something like, I love being single, and I really felt like this would be a fun single period of my life, but I always said to myself I'd go for it if I found someone that I really wanted, if I really liked that person. That then changes the dynamic. He doesn't know if it's him yet, but what he does know is that part of him that wants to strive for a challenge makes him go, I'm going to strive to be the person that she decides she wants to change it for. And I know she's open to it because she stated that. So it's like giving him an ulterior, a different parallel vision for your life that may or may not include him, but makes him want to sell you on the idea of that relationship with him.
Yeah, it sounds like you're sparking his competitiveness.
A little bit. And you can't fuel a long-term relationship on that, but what you can do is change a guy's associations that way. You know, there's an old phrase, people love to buy, they hate to be sold. And in a relationship, it's no different. A guy wants to go out and choose the relationship he wants, but he certainly doesn't want to have someone trying to convince him of it.
Makes sense.
And just to add an important key on that, if he runs, if he bounces, if he's out of there because you said that, you didn't create that. That's where
right.
He was. He was going to bounce anyway once it got to that commitment period. So I think that's important to know. By you saying it up front doesn't cause him to bounce. is, you know, especially if you're saying it in this context with this writer, with this style of energy. Your job is to discover where he is in the first place.
Love that. Marnie, share with
yes.
us, what is the biggest epidemic that's making it hard to find love in the 21st century?
Oh, I love this question. I've been talking about it a lot. I think that that gender roles being confused is really making it hard to find love in the 21st century. I almost feel like, and maybe this is not politically correct, but it's almost like feminism has gone to the extreme to where women have lost their femininity. I think as a result, men are almost like afraid now to be in that alpha role. You know, like I hear a lot of women talking online, like the guys don't ask for their number. You know, they're like, hey, why don't you call me? Because they don't want to be stalkers. They don't want to offer to pick somebody up because they don't want you to think that they're going to come like to your house and like attack you. Men are afraid to make a choice about where to go for dinner because they're afraid she's going to have a gluten allergy and she won't like it anyway, so they just want to ask her. meanwhile, women are like, why isn't he more decisive? So I think that there's this whole, and there's no models for it. We don't really have anyone being the modern alpha feminine woman who's got both of those. And men, you know, don't make as much money sometimes. They don't have to provide by, you know, going out and hunting and gathering food. And everyone is confused. And I think that it does make it really confusing and hard. So the best way to fix that is for a woman to be empowered to really be in her feminine as much as she can and be direct in telling men, you know, I love it when you make decisions, you know, like communicating in the feminine and giving him signs and signals and direct conversation that say, this is what I love about you is that when you do this for me and giving him opportunities to step up and know that it's safe to do that. And then when he takes you to the restaurant, you know, if there's, and you're gluten-free, find something that you like and say it's fabulous. I mean, because you're with him and he made the effort. So it's kind of crazy, but it can definitely be managed.
Yeah, you know, you raise a lot of good points there. And, you know, being a gluten-sensitive person, I know that, you know, for us who have these eating issues, we want to go to the restaurant and grill the server on, you know, is there wheat, is there dairy, is there sugar? But I would say on a first date, try to keep it as a minimum, because I used to really bother me when people did that with me, and then I became one of those people. It's just so sad. Matthew, how do you suggest that we make finding the one more fun?
My philosophy is don't do anything to meet a guy or fall in love that you wouldn't do to better your life anyway. And that actually is simpler than it sounds, because if you have to have an attitude that there is nothing that I'm doing that's just for the purposes of meeting a guy, because as soon as a woman does that, she becomes resentful, especially if she meets bad guys. She's like, why am I doing all of this? This sucks. I don't know. I don't want to do all this for men. But instead, if you want to go and take up a new activity, do it because you know it's going to be better for your life anyway. If you want to go and try something different, do it because you know visiting that place is going to give you experience that you're going to have that's going to serve you anyway. If you go on a date, tell yourself that the things that you're going to learn about social dynamics and about conversation are going to be good for you regardless of whether this is a good or a bad day. Even if this guy sucks and is the most boring, creepy guy on earth, I'm going to learn how to still go out and find something interesting about someone who's not interesting. I'm going to figure out a way to make everything useful. And when you do that, you get into a very positive mindset because you realize that everything has a double effect. Everything has a double benefit. And if at the end of the day the guy comes about because of that, it becomes this unbelievable, incredible bonus, but it's not the core motive at the end of the day.
Love that. Matt Boggs, what are the top things men find attractive, and how can a woman amplify her attraction triggers?
That's a great question. What I love about, you know, I have a degree in biology, and my first job was teaching high school biology, and I love how our history, our genetics, all of that becomes fully outpictured in relationships. And as much as we try to fight against it, relationships work a whole lot easier if we actually surrender and work with, you know, our natural genetic code and biology and how we're triggered. And if you look at how men have been wired up for hundreds of thousands of years, their job was to go out, hunt the food, catch lunch, and then take the long journey, often dangerous because now they became the lunch as they were carrying this food back to the village to present to you as the woman. And this entire climactic moment rests in as he presents you with what he just risked his life and limb to catch and provide. Your response to that is key. Your response to what he's providing to you with his arms outstretched literally triggers his sense of worth, his sense of manhood, his sense of self, and his sense of purpose. And so I think understanding that appreciation and recognition goes far beyond what most women can possibly imagine when it comes to men. And understanding that when you appreciate a man for what he's done, you're literally helping to increase his biochemistry. When you say thank you, when you give him joyful appreciation and you hug him, two things that you can say. One of men's deepest subconscious desires is to have their thoughts respected, their decision making honored. Because when they left the cave, if they went east or west, that oftentimes meant whether they ate or didn't eat, or sometimes if their buddies died or didn't die. I mean, it was a huge decision. So men's decision making is key. So if you can say words like, "You saved me," it triggers something in men. My wife says that just to have fun. I know she's saying it to get a rise out of me, and yet it works all the time. If I, you know, if I pick up some groceries for her, she asks me to do this, and I come in with the groceries, and she's like, "Oh, you saved me. Thank you." And it always puts a smile on my face, man. It just works. Or, "You're brilliant." Men never get tired of hearing that they're brilliant. So if a man makes a good decision about finding a restaurant, you say, "Oh, honey, you are brilliant. This restaurant is amazing. Way to go." Appreciating us is the biggest gift you can possibly give us that triggers our attraction and feel-good chemicals.
Oh, that's great. So I want to know from each of you, is it okay for a woman to make the first move in terms of asking a guy out on a date? Is this good? Is this bad? And what's the best way to do it? And Matthew, what do you say?
I think that a woman doesn't, if she can avoid it, she doesn't want to have to come out and say anything as specific as, you know, "Let's go out on a date." But I think she can do things that are much more subtle that have the same effect. So if she's around the guy and at the end of the conversation she says, "You know, we should hang out sometime." And even if she wants to make it even more casual, she can say, "Oh, you and your friends seem cool. We should all go out, you know, our friends and us should all go out sometime." What happens then is they're going to exchange numbers based on that, and then during the course of texting, they can arrange to see each other. He can take the lead a little more. So there's nothing wrong with that, and I think the easy way to frame it is always, you know, "We should get together sometime." Or if she wants to be slightly more direct, she should pick something that she's doing in the next 7 to 14 days. Maybe it's with her friends. Maybe it's an event she's going to. But she should say, "I'm doing this really cool thing on Thursday. You should come." And that way it's assumptive, it's certain, it doesn't show any doubt, and it's a specific thing that she's inviting him to, as opposed to a generic, "Let's maybe get together for a date," which shows a lot more intent.
Makes sense. What do you think, Marnie?
I'm going to say that asking a guy out on a date is probably not your best move. I think that you want to give all the clear signs and signals that we talked about, and then maybe do what we call like throwing the softball. So, you know, I love, there's a Kubrick exhibit at the museum. I've just been really wanting to go to that. Like, make it, you know, make it obvious, even give him the idea so that he could go, "Oh, I've been wanting to see that too. We should totally go." Of course, it's in context of the conversation that you're having. I always feel like it's just better in the long run if you let him do the pursuing, as long as you've made it really obvious that you're interested so that he feels confident he's going to get a yes.
Oh, I love that. And Matt, what do you think?
And understanding that that is the pursuing, that is the action taking, is how, think about it this way, how can you create space? You know, the feminine energy, if you want to, if you're want to amplify your feminine, that's all about creating space, creating opportunities. Men, masculine men especially, love to seize opportunities, right? And if you look at it as a salsa dance, the first step in a salsa dance is the woman creates space, she steps back, the man steps forward, seizes the opportunity, and leads, but all eyes are on her. She is the star of the show. She is the goddess in that experience. And so by saying what Marnie said, you know, and what Matt said around, hey, I would love to see that exhibit sometime, or my friends and I are all getting together, you know, I would even say, throw him some softballs, give him some opportunities to seize the opportunity before you suggest that you should all go out. And by, if he's talking about something, saying, oh man, I'd love to do that sometime, that sounds amazing, and just giving him as many softballs as you can, you taking that first action and him seizing it, and at the end of the day, you want a guy who's going to seize those opportunities. You probably, I mean, it depends on your style, but most women that I've coached, they would prefer that he ask them out rather than being the one to ask the guy out. So notice that beginnings often lead to endings, that the way the relationship is set up, that's what you're going to get. So don't, you're not going to coach him or grow him into something he's not, right? So just discover who he is, how he is, and if you like how he's showing up, then roll with it.
Love that.
Amen. I love that.
That's so great. Well, you guys, I have one last question for each of you because we're almost out of time here. And, Marnie, I'm going to start with you. What are you most excited about these days, and how can the listeners learn more about you?
Well, one of the questions I get asked so often is, why do men disappear? Why do they vanish? Why do I think they're into me and then they just go away? So we have a free coaching program at datingwithdignity.com that will reveal the three secrets you need to know why men vanish, and we will help you so that it never happens again. Bum, 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 bum.
That's fantastic. Datingwithdignity.com. Fabulous. Matthew, what are you most excited about these days?
I've been having so much fun with my live events. I've been traveling and touring, and it's been the most incredible experience. In the last 2 months, I've been able to reach several thousand women across America. One of the things that I've set up, because so many people miss that tour, is I've actually taken a free 15-minute video from the tour so that women who want to see what that live event is like and get the content from it can actually come to my site and get that video completely free. And we deal with everything from how to tell if a guy has a girlfriend or not from the very beginning to how to actually start meeting the right guys instead of the wrong guys, how to deal with a guy who's blowing hot and cold. All of these things are in the video. So if people come to my site, it's howtogettheguy.com. That's howtogettheguy.com. You can check out that video there. All we require is an email address, but then you can download the whole video.
Fantastic. And Matt, what are you excited about?
I am most excited about the work that we're doing. We've taken the entire Cracking the Man Code course. I'm a big believer that connection is built through understanding. And the deeper we understand how we operate as men and women, what builds connection, what builds attraction, because we're completely different in terms of how we're wired up, how our brains are wired up, how our biochemistry works. And so I've created a whole program that I'm so proud of called Cracking the Man Code that goes into how men build attraction, how men fall in love, how we go through the commitment process, all of that. And so there's a great free video series that will tell you why men pull away, and also one word you can say that will facilitate him falling in love with you. It will facilitate the falling in love process. And so there's a great free content, free videos at crackingthemancode.com. And just this, you know, being teaching alongside with amazing teachers. I know how much work goes into a summit like this, and you are changing so many lives. So I just want to give you a shout out for the amazing work that you're doing and all the lives that you're changing.
Oh, thank you. Well, I want to thank all three of you. This has been really enlightening and fun, and I'm grateful that you took the time and that you shared so brilliantly all the wisdom you've amassed. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And for those of you listening in, Hope you got all this juicy information. Again, the websites to visit, crackingthemancode.com, datingwithdignity.com, howtogettheguy.com. All right, everybody, we'll see you next time.